you know, as we do this podcast, you know, I kind of joke around where sometimes I'm like, is this a business podcast or is it a hardcore podcast or is it like hardcore people in business podcast? Like, I don't know, because we kind of, we get into the theme of having a lot of people from punk and hardcore in here. And I got to tell you, like, the further we do it, these episodes become more and more fun for me because someone recently referred to it as a where are they now podcast, where it's like, oh, I always wondered whatever happened to so-and-so. Like, what did they end up doing? Like, where are they now? And it's kind of fun. But also it's like really cool to see how people have taken things they've learned from punk and hardcore and brought it into the world, but also how the world then has informed their process. Today's guest is a perfect example of that. Longtime friend, someone who I have known at first kind of at the periphery, but then over the years, especially the past few years, developed more of a personal relationship with. And also someone I have a lot of respect for musically, their role in the community, their politics, and also professionally. So today is an interview I've been looking forward to, and I hope you guys all enjoy it as much as I know I'm going to. Before we get into it, though, please subscribe to the podcast. Really appreciate it if you do. It makes a big difference. My name is Aram Arslanian, and this is One Step Beyond. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, heck yeah. So for the uninitiated, for those who don't know, who are you and what do you do?
Like you mentioned, I'm Thomas Vanderpool. I live in Portland, Oregon, and my day job is HR for the public school system. I have been in the public sector for about 10 years in various HR capacities, and before that, I was in the beauty industry.
So HR, man, tell us.
I love relationships with people, and I hate math. So going back to school to get my bachelor's, I already had an associate's in business, and I was doing soul searching of like really what I thought my passion would be. And I got on this organizational leadership ed course, and you know, one thing led to another, and I found that like I can take my love of building teams and being in a relationship with people, and I apply that to my job in HR.
So I'm going to ask you a question I get asked a lot. Is HR there to protect people from business, or is HR there to protect business from people?
I think that that's a really complex question, and it depends on the size of organization that you work for. Like I said, I've worked primarily in the public sector, and I see a lot of the things that are happening today in the private sector with like layoffs, and it's really like the Wild West. In the private sector, like anything goes, people say anything, people do anything. And I'm really lucky to be in the type of environment that seems to be pretty collaborative. And I find myself, because I work for such a large employer, being in a role that stays out a lot of the conflicts that kind of is at the heart of what you're asking. I'm on the outside of the contract negotiations, and you know, I work with administrators and employees to come to good solutions for their schools and their personal schedules and their careers. So on a personal level, what I do is for people. But I think an overall hierarchical level, HR has traditionally been there to protect the interests of the business. And so I really hope that through my interactions with people, I can change that conception.
What are some of the kind of common misconceptions about HR that you've heard that you disagree with?
Well, one thing that I've heard a lot in recent years is HR are the cops of the workplace. yeah, which sucks. To that I say, maybe labor relations is, if you have a union contract or whatever. I think that some misconceptions is that, you know, we're always recording what you say and we're here to like make you slip up and, you know, we're building this record against you. And that is definitely not always the case. You know, I want to make things clear for people, like whether it's understanding what a promotional opportunity looks like or what their healthcare benefits are like. Unfortunately, we have private healthcare in the United States, and that, you know, makes it confusing for people to navigate. Sometimes choice is a good thing, but not when it's overwhelming. And it has to do with your health. It shouldn't be that hard, but it is. So here we are.
So what is it exactly that you do? You kind of spoke in some generalities about it, but if you were to explain to someone, like, this is specifically what I do in my role.
Sure. So I can take like a zoomed out lens and give like a high level overview of the roles that I've held in the past. My first role in the public sector is actually in risk management almost 10 years ago. And I help people with property and liability claims against the county that I worked for at the time, which is about as exciting as it sounds. But that really helped me like cut my teeth in like the professional world. And from there, I was able to move into HR for the Health and Human Services Agency, worked with a few different branches of that sector. But for the last 5 years, I've been working with the school district here in Portland, and I am a workforce management staffer. And this means that I, particularly right now, we are in a season where we got projected enrollment numbers for students for the fall. And that is kind of based on how the state allocates funding for schools, for teachers, and classroom support. And so I'm in an ongoing meeting with administrators to figure out, like, how do we make this work with your budget, especially because the district is facing a deficit for the third year in a row. I think this year is $40 million, if I had to estimate correctly. So I'm answering questions right now about their projected staffing outlook. And then I'm typically the point person for employees if they have general questions about the labor contract. And I also link them with like, oh yeah, that's a paycheck question, go to payroll. Oh, this is like a benefits question, go to benefits. But on a day-to-day, that's kind of what it looks like.
So I sometimes say this to people who I know through like punk and hardcore when it comes to their job. Like, so for example, when I talk to anyone who's a realtor and they grew up in punk and hardcore, I'm always like,
yeah,
seems like kind of like a bizarre leap to play from like a hardcore band to helping people buy houses or whatever, especially the way that we can think of like land ownership and all of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So when I ask people in punk and hardcore that, there's always this kind of like uncomfortable moment. And then they go into the, well, and this is why I do it. And like, this is the why behind it. I've never heard a disappointing answer. I'm always like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Even if it's like, hey, actually, I just find this interesting and it's a good way of doing X, Y, and Z, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So when I think of HR, I don't want to say it's like a weird choice for people in punk and hardcore, but like when you first told me what you did, I was like, huh, okay. So yeah. Tell me about that.
You know, I think that when I was considering a career change, getting out of the beauty industry, I really looked at the role that I was holding there, and I was really passionate about training, and I was really passionate about empowering people with the knowledge that they already had to really go out and get what they want with their career. And I think what actually happened is my mom saw an ad in the newspaper and was like, oh, Shasta County Risk Management is hiring. And I was just like, I really don't want to work in a salon anymore. And, you know, I got that job, but it really helped me discover what I like to do, which is building good teams and like advocating for people. I've had some really hard conversations with hiring managers, like, this person really wants this job. And like, I want to tell you, like, why they're a good fit for that. And I love seeing the success of those hires. Like, I've seen people out in the community that I've hired for a certain job and being like, feel like I played a part in that. And that's a good feeling for sure.
Something that I know about you, because we've talked about politics, is like you're very, you have very well-defined, thought-out like ideas about like what you believe in, basically, and you're not afraid to talk about them. How does that work with your job?
That's a really good question. It's definitely changed over time, both my views and also how they play into what I do. I'm pretty lucky to be in a work environment that is reflective of the views that I hold, and that's kind of the nature of living in a city like Portland. There has been a lot of volatility in the last year or so, last couple school years, with like the teachers union renegotiating their contract and what the public feels they're due and what the educators feel they're due with the contract. And those can be really hard conversations to navigate.
So you brought up something that I'm always interested in talking to punks about specifically. It's that idea that for most of us, when we head into our careers, so even like back when I was a therapist, like, and when I worked in the social services or whatever, there are going to be ideas that you have about politics and how things could be handled that are just not going to come true in your work world. And it's that idea of like, how do you manage what you believe in and stay true to it while also being in an environment that sometimes is totally going to be in line with that, but other times is going to be minorly or radically out of line with that. So what are your thoughts on that as being someone that I know is actually like really about what you believe in?
I think picking your battles is really important. You know, I would obviously never do a job that felt like ethically wrong to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I would advocate and stand up for myself in an assertive way, just to say like, this doesn't align with my beliefs. And, you know, the most important part is like meeting in the middle. If there's a compromise that can be made, to understand where the other person is coming from and make sure that they feel heard. And at the same time, make sure that you explain how you feel about something in a way that is understandable to them as well. But at some point, you kind of have to draw the line. And thankfully, I've never had a situation, I can't do this, I quit, like that kind of thing. So I can only imagine what that's been like for other people.
So why pick your battles? Like I'm gonna push on this a little bit. Like you say this to one audience, they're like, oh yeah, you got to pick your battles. You say it to another audience, they're like, oh, you're just speaking the language of compromise because you want to have a job and, you know, you're kind of taking the easy way out. And not you, but that idea of like picking your battles. Like one person might be like, oh, that's code for just like, I want to keep my job.
Sure. Yeah. I hear that. I think that like building rapport is an important component in maintaining healthy relationships with people. And so, yes, it can look like just keeping your job, but it can also look like, it sounds bad to say strategic, but I think everybody has to compromise at some time in their life if it is okay to do so. This is a really hard question.
It is a hard question, man.
Also, as a impressionable 15-year-old in the Reading hardcore scene, Set It Straight taught me to choose the battles that you live and die for. So
yeah, shout out to Set It Straight, cool band.
Yes.
Yeah, man, I know it's a hard question, and you know, it's a thing that the nature of the work that I do is like, I play at like really senior level. Like, you know, I work with a bunch of CEOs of major companies. And I think sometimes when I talk to people from punk and hardcore, there's like, what exactly do you do? One of my friends is always kind of joking. He's like, you're just like Tony Robbins, which I am not, but I basically work with real senior level leaders across different organizations and different industries. And some of it's just like, how do you develop as a leader and how do you build your team? And some of it is like, how do we approach this problem? And there's a lot of times where I have to think about not me, but when I'm talking to people, it's like picking your battles, picking your spot, understanding where to compromise and where to push. And I don't mean just for people in punk and hardcore. I just mean for anyone who's got any set of principles, the ability to really be in a discussion and like really hold up a mirror to yourself, but also like stay and push on other people's ideas and get to the best result. One of the most important things you can come up with, but it can be really, really difficult early career or even mid-career to get to that space, because it can kind of feel like you're giving up part of yourself. And I encourage people can do whatever they want. Like you can listen to that and be like, oh, that's the language of like, you know, selling out. Sure, whatever. Do whatever you want. Or you could be like, hey, that makes sense. But I think like that space of understanding how to compromise without losing yourself is probably one of the most valuable things I've learned.
Yeah. And I think to what you said about being self-reflective, I think that's where my ability to compromise comes in. I always want to be the type of person who is open to changing their mind and receiving feedback. I think that that's like an essential part in having collaborative relationships with other people. So I always want to be open to the possibility of compromise because of that.
Can I talk about how you carry yourself on LinkedIn for a second?
Oh gosh, yeah. I'm off all socials except for LinkedIn. What a choice, right?
I'm the same. I don't have any social media. I mean, I do for the podcast, but like I don't do any personal stuff. Only on LinkedIn. So you talk about band, where you talk about like your music writing on there, which I like. I think mm-hmm. that's cool. And you talk about like kind of work stuff, but you also critique other companies, which I think is kind of funny. Like I'm like, damn, like this dude's got his LinkedIn and he's like not afraid to kind of like hold a flame to companies on there. Tell me about that.
You know, it all started with Veg Juice. I've been an avid reader for a really long time. And before moving to Portland and living in a small town, like it was my window to like the wider world of veganism. And it was a helpful tool and a helpful resource. And, you know, the further that I've gotten into this journey of what is life or veganism or the way businesses work, I have become incredibly critical of what's being put out there. You know, I think it's no secret that like greenwashing is like super rampant in all businesses, all industries, maybe except for fossil fuel industry, but veganism is no exception. And I started getting really upset when I'd see Veg News caping up for major corporations who were trying to say that they made the best veggie hot dog ever out of like stuff that they put together in a lab and they, you know, joined forces with Oscar Mayer or whatever. And I'm not saying that like I haven't had a Beyond Burger from Carl's Jr. or an Impossible Burger from Burger King or whatever, but I just get really fired up when I see stuff like that, because I'm really passionate about small companies who have been out there making a change for a really long time, who a company like Veg News is like really easy to like really quick to step upon and say, look what this major corporation is doing. And nobody's really reading what I'm saying. So that's why I feel like I can be a little bit ruthless. And I'm also like saying stuff about like CEOs. Like I like to get in fights with people about like the new CEO of Starbucks. That's a pretty fun one because there's just like endless material to pull from. Like how hard is it like to recognize Starbucks Workers United who just want like a fair contract? Like they've agreed to the vote a few years ago and you know, the company will like come to the table with them. And I realized that like I'm in HR, I'm on the other side of that. So maybe the reflection is a little bit easier, but personally, like I grew up the son of a mother in the banking industry. So like I saw a woman like shatter the glass ceiling in a male dominated industry and she became the CEO of a credit union. But my dad was a union rep. So I have this like really interesting, like dual perspective, like conversations with my mom about like being an old school business owner, which we have lots of disagreements. And then my dad, who like in high school, we would pick at Walmart on Black Friday. So I think that that has kind of informed my current views about like how I engage with things that I don't like on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I tell you why it stands out to me. Cause you're in HR. So like, and you know, I'd say most professionals, not most, a lot of professionals are pretty like, try to be pretty thoughtful of what they put on LinkedIn. Again, you know, whatever, people can do whatever they want. I would say that people in HR understandably would be quite try to be quite thoughtful of what they put on for all sorts of social media policies that, you know, that their employer might have. And you go on there and you're very you, like coming to know you. It's like, again, I like that you talk about the writing that you do or for the music scene. I think that's awesome because it is like very authentic. It's just who you are. But when you flame on companies, I always laugh because I'm like, damn, dude, like, like you really shoot, like giving these people both barrels unabashedly. And you don't go crazy, but you like really like put it out there. And it always makes me chuckle, you know, and like some of them, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm glad you're saying that. And other ones, I'm like, what even is this? why do you care about this thing?
Yeah, no, that's true. I tend to go down rabbit holes, but I get people who reach out to me and say stuff like, hey, I tried to apply for a job on your website, or how do I get a job? And I just kind of tell them, I'm like, hey, this is a personal LinkedIn. I don't do business for the school district on here. And I'm very upfront about that. I don't know. It's more fun that way. LinkedIn is so boring. So,
dude, I'll tell you like one of my personal pet peeves. And like, I really try and stay out of the place of like criticizing, I don't know, whatever you want to call them, like creators. I don't know. Mm. I don't know what it is, but like the thing at now where everyone's holding a piece of paper with some like ultra generic, like obvious statement. They're like,
I don't care what you're doing. I don't care where you're working. Yeah.
I saw one. It's like, everyone is deserving of blah, 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 blah. Their workplace. It's like, yeah, of course. Like, yes, yeah, of course. And then it's like 8 bazillion comments under there. Like my LinkedIn, I look at LinkedIn every day multiple times because I do. I have a lot of people reaching out to me on LinkedIn for career advice or advice on things. And I always make time for people. If anyone reaches out to me on LinkedIn, I will always respond if they're asking for career advice, even if it's like just pointing them to a resource or saying, mm-hmm, I don't know. But also like I do a lot of client outreach on there as well. And it's been awesome. So I'm on LinkedIn a lot. And so you might be surprised how much I pay attention to what you're putting on there. Cause A, we're friends, and B, I'm always like, oh, like what? Well, no, of course, like we're buds. LinkedIn is kind of a fascinating thing for me because like, I don't know, like I don't care. People say whatever you want on social media. Like if people ask me for advice on it, and we'll chat on that in a second, but like, I don't care. Like you want to say some dumb stuff on LinkedIn or whatever, go ahead. Like it doesn't matter to me particularly. But if you want some solid career advice about it, then of course I'm gonna give it to people. But yours seems to ride like a pretty nice line of being like real authentic, but also like reasonably professional at the same time. And it really stood out to me because it's you, but it is like professional you, but you don't hesitate to flame on people.
Thanks. I appreciate that. What you're saying about like, you know, folks who are like holding up signs or whatever, and that gets a lot of engagement. I think that like it's true, the more generic the content, the more engagement it gets. Like I'm writing about hyper specific, you know, musical subgenres, and like 4 people like it, and that's okay. That doesn't hurt my feelings that I'll get 8,000 comments or whatever, and that's not why I'm doing it in the first place. So it is a really interesting ecosystem of opinions and I don't know, all of that.
So going to with the idea of kind of just being who you are, how much of who you are do you bring into the work that you do? Or do you kind of close off or guard some of those parts of yourself?
You know, it really depends. I serve 17 different administrators within the district. I think there's like 82 schools, and I served 17. I used to have like almost 30, and depending on how much time I spend with them, like over the phone or through email or whatever, I suss out what's important to include and what's not. And you know, a few years ago, I was on tour. I did my first ever European tour, and some of my principals I called and I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to be on tour in Europe in a couple of weeks." And they're like, "Oh, that's so great! Like, that's so awesome! I'm so excited for you! That's what an amazing opportunity!" And that just comes from like cultivating that relationship and knowing that that's like a safe person that you can share personal things with. And you know, now I have a principal that knows that I like music, and she'll call me every once in a while, and she's like, "Yeah, like I saw like Echo and the Bunnymen recently, and I just like danced, and it was such a great night for me and stuff." And I think that like understanding that line of what you share with people in certain contexts and what you don't share is really important to building trust with people. We recently had a big structural change on our team where the work that I do was sort of cut in half. And now we have two people doing what was formerly one person's job. And that really allows us to give such a more targeted approach to how we serve others. And within that, I inherited five brand new schools. And so I'm managing five brand new relationships with administrators. And yesterday, I sat across from two of the brand new ones in a big meeting and met them face to face for the first time. And I could see that they both had very different demeanors towards me. And, you know, I didn't take that personally. It's like everybody comes to the table with their own set of personal dynamics. And so, of course, I'm going to respond differently to each of them. One I have emailed and phone called with, so there is a little bit more ease in that relationship. And this other person was really one of my first interactions with them. And there was a lot more like guarded, like, "I don't know if I should trust you. Like, I'm asking you a question and you're giving me an answer." But I have some not even thinly veiled skepticism about your answer. And, you know, I'm not taking that personally. I really, you know, as I've said before, I really value my relationships with people. And in the increasingly remote world, we rarely get to engage in that on a personal, like live level. So to do that in person is really great every once in a while.
It's interesting you say not taking it personal, though. So I hear what you're saying. Like, you know, it's like you kind of got to pick and choose how much of yourself you bring into a conversation. And so I want to get into that not taking it personal a second, but there's this thing that, you know, so I hear a lot of people talk to me about how things should be in a workplace, like a lot. I hear it every day. And it's like, "Oh, we should be like this. We should be like that." And whatever it is always like the most 100% version of whatever the idealized thing is for them. And like for some person, it might be something that's like super liberal. And for other people, it might be something that's super conservative. But even if you take the politics out of it, it can be driven by personalities. Like, so for example, someone who's not like really very relational with people, they just like, "The workplace should just be all about business and only about business. And people should communicate this way." Or people who are very relationship driven, it's like, "It should be a family and a community." So I hear a lot of kind of extreme takes on how the workplace should be, which is fun for like for me, because it's like interesting. It's always interesting. But one of the things I hear like very often, and I kind of chuckle about it, is like people's like, "You should always be able to bring exactly who you are, your whole self, into work every day." And like I chuckle at that because it's like, I don't know. Have you ever met a jerk before? Like, I don't know. I don't know if I want a jerk to bring their whole selves. And then someone might, you know, the counter to that be is like, "Well, why are they a jerk?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, like exactly." So like, you want to talk about like workplace culture, you want to talk about leadership dynamics, you want to talk about functionality of a team. To simply say like everyone should just be exactly who they are all times at work, it's like, yeah, okay, like sure, if that's what you want to say. If you want to talk about the realities of that, it's far more complex. And for me, that's like that kind of like picture, the piece of paper someone holds up on LinkedIn. It's like, you should be exactly who you are in the workplace, pointing at it, smiling. And, you know, it's like, yeah, that's just the most, like, you're telling people exactly what they want to hear, but that's not the reality of work. There's like situations, there are nuances, there's positional stuff. Like sometimes people have positional authority to you and they're amazing people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have positional authority over you and they suck and they're awful and they're like bullies. Sometimes people who you have positional authority over are wonderful to work with. Sometimes they're bullies and they just know how to push your buttons or to make you feel anxious or insecure. There are a lot of dynamics that come in to show up exactly how you are at work. And that's why I asked you about the authenticity piece, because like, I know you relatively well, and I find you to be just like you're pretty honest about who you are and your understanding of yourself. And I'm real interested how that works out for you at work, like how that plays out.
It has depended in roles, because, you know, you just spoke to your relational authority and relationships. And I think that like I've had both of those types of leaders in the workplace. And some of those leaders will just roast you, like they'll be bullies. And that can be character building, but it can also be really demoralizing. You know, when I worked in the beauty industry, I was in a salon where the owners were like ex-hardcore people. And, you know, I just thought that was going to be the best thing ever. And the owner was actually really terrible to me. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a relationship that like really damaged me because of how personal the beauty industry can be. Everybody knows everybody's business.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So part of me feels like I fled to the public sector, where there is a little bit more like button down mentality of like, we're more professional kind of things. And that worked really well for me. Mm-hmm. Until I realized that like, it's not that different in the grand scheme of things. But I've had some really like meaningful, authentic connections in that industry. For whatever reason, I've had really good relationships that have allowed me to show up as myself authentically.
I'm going to push on that. So I've got this this friend in Europe who is the CEO of the Frankfurt School of Business, of finance and business. His name is Niels, and he's a hardcore, not an ex-hardcore person, like a current, like, you know, wears like Instead shirts and is like actually into hardcore, goes to hardcore shows. And he was on the podcast and we were talking about subcultures, and it's like, whatever the subculture is like, it kind of seems to play out the same as hardcore. You know, there's that kind of like, I mean, I can't speak to every subculture, but a lot of them, you know, deeply critical of other people. And part of it is like, you know, you're protecting your culture, right? And like, this thing matters to you. So you're protective of it, and you're kind of like, who's posers, who's not posers. But there's that kind of liberty that people within subculture give themselves and give other people to be like super harsh and like pretty shitty and backbiting. And there's all sorts of things I could say. So he was saying it about academia, that he was like, because he was a very serious academic. He was like, damn, dude, like academics from a subculture perspective, it's just as bad, if not worse than hardcore punk in terms of like criticizing people, gatekeeping, like being harsh, like, you know, like, who's in, who's out, like all that kind of stuff. It's like kind of publish or die. And it's like, for example, for bands, like putting out records constantly, like all of that. And to me, it's like a little, you know, when people talk about going into business and they're like, oh, it'd be so amazing if I worked with hardcore people. Would it? I don't know. Like, ever been in a tour van? Like, tour vans aren't necessarily the nicest places, right?
That's true.
So my business, I'm lucky with my business because there's definitely punk and hardcore people in the company. And that's worked out for me in a lot of ways. And it hasn't worked out for me in a lot of ways. Like, it's worked out for me in a lot of ways where just that like amazing creativity of like punk and hardcore people to come together and make something work and figure it out is the best. And if you get someone who's like, they're down, they understand, they know how to be in a tour van, it's sick. It's amazing. But where it's not great is like, if it's not working out, or people don't want, they want you to be their friend, but not their boss. And they can't handle having a boss who's like a punk person. It's like, yeah, it probably shouldn't work here. So subculture has worked out for me, like within the company to a degree. But I'll tell you, I love working in spaces where the expectation is people are more buttoned up and people are less like, less comfortable with being shitty to each other. And it's not always like that, but like working in the corporate world has been a bit of a relief for me, because like when I worked in the therapeutic world, it was like in the social services, it was like very subculture-y. It was very like backbiting. It was very intense. And I don't want to remove myself from that. I have been like that, especially when I played in bands and punk and hardcore and worked in that industry. Working in a more of a corporate industry where there's the expectation of being more buttoned up, it doesn't mean that stuff doesn't exist, because of course it does. But just the general expectation is people are quite a bit more buttoned up, and at least they're very much more often than not watching what they say. So the expectation is, I'm not going to show up being this like totally show you everything I am. You're not going to either. And then over time, we're going to build a type of relationship that's functional, but generally healthy.
Yeah. A lot of that resonates with me. And one thing I really liked about your business, I don't know if your website's like this anymore, but I loved one of the first layouts of the website where it had like your professional picture, and then it had your other picture, like it was you in a suit and then you in an SSD shirt, and then everybody else had pictures like that too. I thought that was really cool. That was a really great way to showcase your business that seemed really authentic and personal, and I liked that. And the reason that resonated with me is because when I worked for Shasta County, it was definitely a more formal environment. And you know, you talk about dress code, that's a HR thing, I guess. It really hasn't been the roles that I've held, but I got to the point where I got comfortable. Monday through Thursday, I'd dress like this, and then every Friday, I would allow myself to have band T-shirt Friday. And it was cool. Like, you know, people asked me questions and, you know, I was able to share a little part of myself with people, you know, 25% of the week.
Can I tell you why that changed on our website?
I would love to know.
We started hiring people who weren't from punk and hardcore or from like subculture necessarily.
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't really like music. Like, I don't know what band I would wear. And we had these two people. One was like, is it okay if I wear a country shirt? Because I'm into country music. I'm like, yeah, of course, that's fine.
Yeah.
But we had another person who's like, I don't know who I listen to. I'm like, well, what music do you listen to? They're like, I just kind of put on like a Spotify playlist of like, I don't know, like dance music or whatever. And they were super embarrassed, like almost like they felt like, like they weren't cool enough to wear. And I felt so bad. I was like, oh my gosh, like it is not an expectation that you like music, that you work here. And it felt like kind of like we were setting up like you're not cool if you don't like, unless you have like a strong opinion about music, you're not cool. And yeah. It was a real eye opener for me, because like
sure. You
know, punk and hardcore, it's like, who's your favorite bands? Oh, you got the wrong bands. You don't know anything. You know, it's like, I unintentionally kind of was setting a dynamic about that. So that's the first reason. But can I tell you, let me tell you something that has to do with punk and hardcore specifically. Like, so that's one that I had to adapt because it made sense for making sure our business was more like inclusive and brought the right people in. But let me give you a punk and hardcore thing that I changed that I regretted.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. So, you know, React Records.
Obviously.
Well, not everybody who listens to punk or listens to this podcast is going to have anything to do. So I'll just give everyone the background.
I feel bad for those people. Sorry.
Well, thank you. I grew up playing music and it's played a huge role in my life. And at one point I started a record label, and it was not my first record label. I've done three record labels, but it was the one that I really put everything into. And it was a time in my life where the main band I had been playing with was no longer around. And I'm just like a doer. I like doing things. And very specifically, someone said to me one time, I was a guy that I had only known through music, and just, he lives on the other coast. He lives on the East Coast. We were chatting one day, and I wasn't on tour. They were on tour, and I was just hanging out with them. And he was like, man, you're like a lot more fun than I thought you were. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, well, you're just a like all business all the time. And I was like, kind of taken aback. But I thought about it later. I'm like, I actually am all business. And it's not all business like business. It's just that I'm a doer. I like doing things. And probably one of the only people that I just hang out with is my wife. Like, we just hang out and we're together all the time and it's the best. But most people I'm doing stuff with because I like doing things. And it's not just doing things like, oh, let's sit down and watch a basketball game. No, like I like doing things, like tactile things, like putting things together, or let's go for a run, or let's go do this, or let's go do that. And so I build most of my relationships and maintain most of my relationships through doing things. And they're usually things that have to do with like assembling things, like a song or a band or a tour. So after I'd played in this band for a long time, I kind of was like, I don't know, what do I do with myself? So I start this record label. And I started it just because I had this friend who was in this band. I was like, I'll put out your demo on vinyl, blah, blah, blah. But one of the things about the record label that always mattered to me is that I wanted every single part of every single record to say something, like to have some kind of like really intentional point that we're taking. And one of them was that we always put these like little mini essays into all the records. And they were intended that if someone read it, that they'd kind of be like, who the hell are these people to be telling me about like integrity or respect or like understanding? Like the whole idea was like, why is this person from this band putting this like almost like written philosophical lecture into this punk record that I bought for $5? And the whole idea was like, just like a full on, like we're trying to engage, we're trying to get ideas going. Even if that idea was like, who the hell are you to be lecturing me? Like, you know, God, I didn't sign up to get this lecture. But I loved it. And I loved getting different people's perspectives because we'd have all these different people write it. But then from the bands that were on the record label and the people who were working at the record label, after a few years, they were like, hey, we should stop doing this. And or bands would be like, we don't want this in our record. And I was like, well, why? And they're like, oh, we feel it's kind of like, it's setting us up as like, we're like, you know, overtly moral people, or that we're like lecturing people or any of this stuff. And I was like, well, yeah, that's the point. Like, not to come across like overtly moral people, but to be putting ideas out there and constantly like kind of challenging things. And for me, like, I don't know, like, I love Youth of Today for a reason. And it's not a commentary on anyone in Youth of Today. It's just like, the music is unrelenting. It's like unbelievably powerful. And the lyrics, whatever one may or may not think about Ray Capo, the lyrics are like deeply, deeply philosophical and challenging. And if I'm not doing something on that level, then why am I doing anything at all? Like, I'm not just here to put out like, I just don't want to put out some band's demo just because like, oh yeah, because there's a million other people who will do that and a million other record labels, and they should do that. I want to put out something that's kind of like poking and like inviting conversation or forcing conversation or any of those things. And at the time, I didn't want to be a shithead. So I was like, okay, if you don't want to put it in your record, I get it. You know, it's fine. And it was a compromise I wish I'd never made. And it was pretty much for me the end of being interested in the record label, where I was like, eh, I don't really care about this anymore. Because like, there are a bazillion record labels that will put out some person's band. I want to put out a specific kind of thing. And I always viewed putting out a record as not just me putting out someone else's ideas, that like my ideas and the ideas of all of my friends and everyone that was in our network was part of that conversation. So one thing I'm willing to be like, oh yeah, yeah, I've got to compromise and do that. But another thing where I'm like, you know what? I regret compromising on that. I don't want to do that at all. So those are two different examples of how I could play with those things.
I kind of just have to respond to that a little bit by saying that, I own a lot of those records. So I've read a lot of those essays and they've left an impression on me. And like, I have a framed poster of the first React showcase in my kitchen right now. I'm like, I guess for the people who, you know, people who aren't familiar with, you know, what Aram did in that time period, from my perspective, it was really important to me. Like, that, just being at that fest was a really integral part of like discovering myself as like, I don't know, like a 19-year-old or whatever, on my musical journey. I'd been involved in hardcore for, you know, a few years at that point, but being there was like this cultural explosion for me. And it was like, this is who I am. And that really had an impact on me. It still does to this day, you know, whether it's like informing my taste of music, a group of people that, you know, have become my friends, like you, Ram, or I helped run a record label for a number of years. And the template of React was always something aspirational to me in doing that. So all the things that you described as being a doer, you never know what kind of impact they have on other people. And it's, you know, probably the reason that we're having this conversation right now is because that was like so important to me and still is.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. You know, all of this stuff about being like who you are and knowing where your ethics should kind of play into your professional career. Because most people, I can't speak for everyone, but most people have to like go and have some kind of a career, like whatever level it is. Like it could be, you could just work for yourself, like selling stuff, or you could go and like work in the corporate space. But like who you are and what you believe in totally matters. And you got to figure out how to carry that. One step. One.